Happy Friday and a good midday to you and yours. This is the Midday Program with Trey and BK on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. Streaming live all the time, 24-7, when and wherever you may be on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Today is Friday, May 17th, 2019. I am your host, BK, Brad Kellner. No Trey Elling today. He is taking the day off to go play volleyball. Yes, I'm serious. That's what he's doing. He's using one of his valuable, non-refundable days off to go play volleyball. He's a part of that AVP tour event that's in town this weekend. But I believe Trey will be on the afternoon show with Chad Hastings from 3 to 7 today. So if you do need your Trey fix, number one, what is wrong with you? But number two, you could still get it this afternoon. But just me today in studio. But of course, we've got our man Wags across the glass. What's going on, man? Happy Friday.
Hey, happy Friday to you, brother.
You survived the first week of the morning shift.
I think I have.
You awake back there?
Yeah, I'm hanging in there on pins and needles, man. Just waiting on your potent product.
What's going on this weekend? You just going to sleep the entire
yeah,
time?
Yeah, that and yard work. I think Katie's going to get me out there in the yard.
Sleep and yard work.
Yeah, well, I mean, we got some type of green foliage growing from the gutters now, so instead of me getting up on top of the roof, we're gonna have to get that extension out there and get the old shop back. Yeah, dude, not cool. Not cool, man.
That sounds like the
Reed,
you
need to grow up a little bit.
I was about to say, make your son do that. What, he's 12?
He's only 12.
Ah, he can do yard work. That's fine. I think I was doing yard work at that age.
Jake with SLP Lawn Care. Gotta get them.
Yeah, get somebody else to do it. That's how I solve all my problems in this world. But Wags is here, of course. We'll be rocking and rolling. Specs text line 512-337-3776. We want to hear from you. I will check the Specs text line today. So if you've got something to say, feel free to shoot it there. Of course, hit us up at Twitter. On Twitter, I'm at Brad Kellner, Wags at Not the Fake Wags. We've got a great show in store for you today. We'll talk some NBA playoffs. Of course, game two of the Western Conference Finals. It was phenomenal. We'll get into that. And just got confirmation, we will check in by the Bay. We will talk to Matt Steinmetz of 95.7 The Game in San Francisco. We'll get a Kevin Durant injury update. We'll also just talk about the Western Conference Finals and the big come-from-behind victory for the Golden State Warriors at Oracle last night. We'll also head up to the DFW Metroplex to talk some Dallas Cowboys with Jory Epstein, who covers America's team for USA Today. She's a very good friend of mine, a rising star in the sports journalism industry. Does great work covering the Dallas Cowboys, so we'll check in with her at about 11:30. We'll talk some Texas Longhorn football. Of course, Longhorn football never sleeps. There is no offseason for Texas football here on this show. And also, we might be getting closer. I say might be. Big grain of salt here. We might be getting closer to the return of the NCAA football and basketball video games that we all know and love so much. 2014, of course, the last year we had an NCAA football video game. Hopefully we are on our way back to the return of that series from EA Sports. So all that coming up today. Of course, we'll have the Schvitz since it is Friday. Your time to shine at 11:45. We'll get Tinder time. We'll get where are we at in society. We'll get shooting the bull. All the standard fun we have on the midday program. But first, to start today's program, it might be time, Wags. It might be time for the autopsy of 2019 Texas Longhorn baseball. Things are looking bleak for the Horns as Texas dropped the series opener to Oklahoma at the Dish last night. 4-2, the final of game one of the final regular season series of the year for Texas. And it's starting to look like it might be today, might be the final day of Texas Longhorn baseball, of course, because of the gloomy weather forecast for tomorrow. The Longhorns have already announced a schedule change, so you'll have a doubleheader of Horns baseball today. We'll have a 12:45 game one, and then the regularly scheduled 6:30 game two tonight. That 12:45 game, the early game, you can hear over on AM 1260, and the nightcap we'll have right here on 104.9 The Horn. But yes, last night, Oklahoma took the series opener 4-2, the final score. We talked about it yesterday. We were hoping some of the momentum from Tuesday's dominant 9-0 victory over the Incarnate Word, we were hoping some of that would transfer to last night's game, and that just didn't happen. I mean, all the issues we've seen from this team all year showed up again yesterday. Walks from the pitching staff, lack of defense, errors reared their ugly head again yesterday, and also just a lack of offense, a lack of timely hits. Texas could only put up 2 runs. Oklahoma only needed 2 pitchers last night in holding the Longhorns to those 2 runs. And, yeah, everything that was positive from Tuesday, Texas had no errors against the Incarnate Word, obviously put up a 9 spot, got a great performance out of the starter, Coy Cobb, and everybody who came in relief on Tuesday. None of that translated to last night. Oklahoma got to Bryce Elder early on. Mason Hibbler, a big error in the first inning. There's that defense. That ended up costing Texas. That run went around to score in the first inning, which gave Oklahoma an early 1-0 lead. The Sooners added another run in the second, which, well, the inning started because of a leadoff walk. And I know it's cliche, but it's cliche for a reason, that leadoff walks always come back to bite you. And that was the case yesterday for Texas a couple of times. We saw it first in the second inning. Then we saw it again in the sixth inning. Oklahoma was up 2-0 after 5. And scored 2 more in the top of the 6. Both of those runs, dudes who walked. The base on balls was costly last night for Texas, and we've seen that so often from this pitching staff all year long. Walks being an absolute bugaboo for Texas on the mound this year. That was the case yesterday. So Oklahoma went up 4-0. Texas did put up 2 in the bottom of the 6, but that was it. They couldn't put up any more than that. Give credit to Nathan Wiles, Oklahoma's starting pitcher, their best pitcher. Guys putting together a heck of a season, now 8-3 on the year for the Sooners. Look, Skip Johnson, every Texas baseball fan knows about Skip Johnson, the former Longhorn pitching coach, was here for a long time, did phenomenal things with this pitching staff. Some of that is translating over to Oklahoma as he is now the skipper up there. Nathan Wiles was great, went just 8 innings, gave up 2 runs, 8 strikeouts of Longhorn batters. And Texas had a chance in the 9th inning, a leadoff single from Ryan Reynolds, but a quick double play killed any sort of semblance of a Longhorn rally last night. So Texas falls in the series opener. Now, it's not officially over yet.
I was going to say, you got any hope left? We need some help.
I have no hope. I mean, technically, mathematically, this thing is not over for the Longhorns, but I said it yesterday. I mean, Texas needs to win at least 2 of 3, which means they have to win both games today to even have a chance. Now, the Longhorns did control their own destiny going into this series. If they swept Oklahoma, I knew for a fact they were going to be a part of the Big 12 tournament next week in Oklahoma City. Obviously, though, the sweep is off the table right now. So the other scenario, Texas wins 2 of 3, and Kansas has to sweep Kansas State. That series starts tonight. It's tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday up in Lawrence. It is a home series for the Jayhawks, but if you're putting your eggs in Kansas winning games and not basketball, you're doing it wrong. You're doing yourself a disservice, and that's what has to happen. So, look, I don't have any faith in Texas winning 2 games today. I mean, this team has lost 10 of its last 11 Big 12 conference games. I don't know how you can possibly be optimistic that Texas goes out there today and gets the job done. Now, okay, I'll try to give you some hope from the Texas Longhorn perspective. It is senior day for Texas, so guys are going to show out. They're going to be a little bit more inspired, hopefully, to go play in front of their home fans, in front of this home crowd for one final time. And also, with Oklahoma's win yesterday, the Sooners officially clinched the spot in the Big 12 tournament. So maybe you catch Oklahoma taking their foot off the gas a little bit.
Rest some arms a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Look, it's still Texas OU. It's still a massive rivalry, and Oklahoma's going to come in here, and they want to sweep Texas. It'd be the same the other way around.
Yeah, that's a statement, not just taking a series, sweeping it.
Yeah, exactly. And Oklahoma's trying to build some momentum, and they're a team probably on the outside looking in for the NCAA tournament as well, so they're trying to build up some quality wins for their resume to see if they have a shot for the actual big dance in college baseball. So I don't know. Maybe that's a positivity for you, the fact that it's senior day. Maybe that will inspire guys to play a little bit better. Once again, Oklahoma, not as much incentive for them to be at their best today, but I don't think Oklahoma's going to really take their foot off the gas or make things easy for the Longhorns by any stretch. So Texas is going to have to earn it. But once again, even if the Longhorns do take care of business today, win both games against Oklahoma to win this series, relying on KU, a very bad Kansas baseball team, to sweep a, you know, a very mediocre to bad K-State team, it's not like it's completely out of the question that the Jayhawks would sweep the Wildcats. But once again, if you're relying on Kansas baseball or Kansas football to win you a game, if that is what it takes for you to have a positive scenario, then you are in trouble. So today,
maybe you shouldn't be here.
I was about to say, yeah, and look, this Texas team, it's been an incredibly disappointing second half to this season. This Longhorn team is 26-26 on the year. They are 6-15 in conference play. I mean, the fact that this team even has a chance to reach the Big 12 tournament is kind of a joke. It just shows how mediocre this conference has been and how, yeah, there's so many middling teams in this league here in 2019. The fact that the Horns even have a chance is remarkable because they're winning 29% of their Big 12 games. They shouldn't even have the opportunity to compete for a championship.
And we saw it last year, right? They had a pivotal series late in the year last year. They weren't doing too well, and then they won a pivotal game at a crucial time, and
yeah,
they got hot. They
yeah,
got
last year was the exact right opposite, right?
This isn't exactly that team.
No, when Texas needed to string together some wins last year, they were able to do it. No problem. Big series win against Texas Tech, and of course, sweeping Oklahoma State and ending up sweeping TCU to win the Big 12 Conference a year ago. But there was a guy named Cody Clemens. Last year's team was much deeper. David Hamilton was a part of things as well. And yeah, it almost has been a tale of two seasons for Texas baseball in 2019. I mean, who would have thought we'd be in this situation just based off how much success this team had in the non-con this year? Let me do my math, make sure I have this right. In non-conference games this season, Texas is 20-11. It's pretty respectable. They've just been so bad in this league this year, and it's been a down year for the Big 12. It's not like this is a really top-heavy conference with a bunch of national championship contenders. Yeah, Baylor's really good. They're having a great year. Texas Tech has built into a formidable program up in Lubbock. Oklahoma State's doing a good job. But this is not a great Big 12 year by any stretch of the imagination. It's just been a disappointing one for Texas. So this might be the end. This might be your final chance to go support the Longhorns here in 2019. Get out to the dish. You've got two opportunities to do so. It is Friday, man. Take off work. I know what you people do anyways in this town on a Friday. So go enjoy some Longhorn baseball. It might be the final time, unfortunately, in 2019. But knock on wood, bring your rabbit's foot, say a prayer, whatever you have to do to bring the Longhorns some luck today. And also, root for KU, man. You got to rock chalk it with me this weekend. So there you go. Some Texas baseball conversation, some Longhorn baseball thoughts. We'll take your thoughts 337-3776. Any sort of optimism for you Texas baseball fans, or is this it? Is this the final day? Can we officially have the autopsy for the 2019 Texas baseball team? All right, let's shift over to some NBA from last night. Western Conference Finals Game 2 at Oracle. And a reminder, we will talk to Matt Steinmetz, who covers the Dubs for 95.7 The Game by the Bay. I will check in with him next segment. We'll get the latest and greatest on Kevin Durant. We also have some Steve Kerr audio we'll get you later in the show. The coach of the Golden State Warriors giving an update on Kevin Durant, but I won't bury the lead any more than this. We do know that KD will not be making the trip to Portland with his Golden State Warriors teammates. So no Game 3 and no Game 4 for the Slim Reaper, for the Durantula. And apparently KD does not like the Durantula nickname, so sorry about that. He'll tweet about it from one of his many accounts, I'm sure. But a heck of a game last night. Look, Game 1 was a dud between these two teams. Portland looked really tired after a hard-fought 7-game series against the Denver Nuggets. We kind of knew, yeah, Game 2, you don't want to go down 2 games to love. You knew Portland was going to play with a little bit more sense of urgency, a little bit more desperation. I mean, Game 1 almost felt like a regular season type of contest. Golden State cruised to a victory. I know it was 6 points, a 6-point margin after the third back in Game 1, but Golden State was in control from start to finish back on Tuesday night. Last night, a completely different story. It was Portland who got off to the great start. Blazers led by as many as 17 in the first half. They were up by 15 at recess. Like, all right, you know, maybe Golden State is finally starting to feel the effects of not having Kevin Durant on the floor.
Eight late in the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
too, dude.
Exactly. I mean, Portland's seemingly in control through most of this game. And Golden State just, they did what Golden State does, the heart of a champion and experience. I know that's cliche. I know people think that's overused at times, talking about how important experience is at this time of the year. But hey, when Warriors players and coaches are saying that that matters, then I'm going to side with them. Golden State's been in this situation before. They've come from behind in many important games over the course of this dynastic run that they've been on for the last five seasons. And they're really, really good at home. I always say it. You know, the Warriors avalanche, the Warriors Category 5 hurricane, as Rod Babers calls it. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. For that team. And we saw that last night in the fourth quarter. Look, everyone's going to talk about the offense and Steph Curry turning it on late, Klay Thompson doing what Klay Thompson does. But the difference in why Golden State was able to battle back last night, I thought, was on the defensive end of the floor. They held Portland to 46 points in the second half. That's hard to do. I mean, Portland,
Klay and Dre.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Klay, Dre, and Iggy. Obviously, on that final possession, Andre Iguodala, the controversial call, no call strip of Damian Lillard. I thought it was a great no call. We'll get to that more in a second. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the Warriors have some incredible defensive players. Draymond Green gets the love that he deserves. He's been a multi-time defensive player of the year finalist in this league. Everybody knows how good of a defensive player Dre is. But somehow, some way, people don't get it with Andre Iguodala. And people really don't get it with Klay Thompson. I think this postseason is starting to show people how great of an on-ball defender Klay Thompson is. I mean, you think of Klay, you think of the 30 to 35 point quarters he can seemingly put up at will. You think of one of the best shooters in the history of the NBA. You think of offense with Klay Thompson, and it's hard to blame you. He's a phenomenal offensive player, one of the best shooters this game has ever seen. But yeah, his defensive acumen is truly underrated.
Yeah, why is Dame and why is CJ struggling?
Exactly. Yeah, and I heard you mention it on the morning show today, Wags. It seems like whenever one of those guys gets hot, they'll flip Klay on him.
That's what they do.
And they'll slow things down. Credit Steve Kerr for that. But yeah, I thought the defense really, really tightened up for Golden State in the second half. Of course, we saw it on that final possession with Andre Iguodala. And yeah, Klay Thompson doing what Klay Thompson does. And man, Draymond Green, if you've listened to this program, you know I'm very critical of Draymond Green. I think he's a system player. I think he's the best system player in the NBA and maybe the history of the NBA. But I think he's one of those dudes, if you take him off Golden State, he's probably not going to be much of a big-time contributor. Nowhere near the all-star player that he has been during his NBA career with the Dubs. But I'll tell you what, after a mediocre regular season for Draymond Green, that dude has turned it on. He has been the X factor, really going back to the Houston series. He has been phenomenal. He doesn't get the headlines that Steph and Klay do, and of course Kevin Durant, when he's on the floor, get. And that's because he doesn't light things up offensively. But my goodness, he has been an absolute beast in this postseason, especially since the Kevin Durant injury. He deserves a ton of credit for Golden State beating Houston and, of course, the Warriors for having a 2-0 lead against Portland. But like, I can't talk about Golden State without mentioning, I mean, Steph Curry, man.
Were we surprised, though? I mean, of course, there was the thought in the back of our head a little bit, you know, can Portland maybe steal one, go in here, and maybe if they go into Oracle, steal one,
yeah.
Right? I don't think it's going to happen now, man.
Yeah, I felt like last night was their chance.
Yeah, that was it.
I mean, it's look, I was picking Golden State in five games, maybe six. I thought maybe the Durant injury would cause Golden State. I'm still going to give Portland one. At their home floor at the Moda Center. That's a tough place to win. And, you know, they were close enough last night to give me some confidence that they can win a game in this series. But
I hope it goes back to Oracle. I hope it does.
What are you feeling? I mean, are you you're bringing out the brooms
done,
right
man.
Now? You're not the only one. I mean, you are not the only one.
Cantor was great last night, too. I mean, Cantor played good defensively. It's just, they're just so tough, man. I mean, even when you don't think that the Warriors have depth, they do.
They do.
They do. They got Livingston and Iggy leading the twos.
Yeah, and Kevon Looney's
Looney
had a heck of a postseason. How about him? 14 points on 6 of 6 shooting last night. 7 boards off the bench. Rockets fans could tell you all about Kevon Looney being a pest, especially on the glass. We saw that last night as well. And Steph Curry, too. I mean, offensively, right? Klay Thompson was great in the first half. Struggled a little bit to get things going in the second half. And Steph Curry turned it on. How about this, Wags? I mean, everybody knows how good Steph has been since Kevin Durant got hurt in the third quarter of Game 5 in the series against the Houston Rockets. Steph Curry, in 176 minutes since Kevin Durant has gotten injured, Steph Curry has 171 points, almost a point a minute. Last night, he scored 37 in 39 minutes, which actually dragged his points per minute rate down to 45.5.
Really good to have a secondary
weapon. For 48
weapon.
Minutes. Yeah, he's averaging 45.5 points per 48 minutes without Kevin Durant.
And then
Durant
your tertiary weapon is Klay Thompson.
Yeah, I mean, my Twitter timeline was telling me Steph Curry sucks. Oh, the internet. The internet's never wrong. Wags, it was telling me Steph Curry's terrible.
You got to feel for Cantor. And I hate going back to Cantor because he's just kind of a lollygag type of player and just all defense, right? But, I mean, you got to feel for this guy, right? I don't think many people know he is celebrating Ramadan, or it's in his Muslim and it's his Muslim holiday. It's the season of Ramadan, right? So mm-hmm. He cannot consume any water, any food beyond the hours of sun, right? So whenever there's sun up to sundown, he cannot consume any type of water to have energy, right? So my God, even during the game last night, you know, he can't take any water. You know what I mean? So that's got to be pretty tough. He's only put the output that he is on offense. He's only giving you 4 points. But the stuff that he does defensively for Portland, you hate to say that it's not enough because, I mean, he's been putting out just as much as he can for what he's been able to have. But, dude, he's going to have to show up just a little bit more if Golden State wants to keep this thing from if Portland wants to keep this thing from going to a
Yeah, center. Cantor didn't play that much last night, only 19 minutes for him, and he was off the floor in the fourth quarter, which was interesting.
Fatigue, right?
Yeah, it was interesting. Well, I think it's more Terry Stotts, and I don't want to compare Enes Kanter to Hakeem Olajuwon, but Hakeem Olajuwon balled out very often during Ramadan, which is truly remarkable.
Different
that,
type of player,
that's
though.
Possible. But yeah, Hakeem the Dream is one of the best players in the history of the NBA. Enes Kanter is an average, at best, big man in this league. He's good at talking trash.
Yeah.
Kanter might be better at Hakeem at talking trash, but that's about
What'd
it.
What'd you think from Little Brother?
From Seth Curry?
Yeah.
I'm a big Seth Curry fan, man. I really am. And it was kind of cool in the fourth quarter last night. Steph and Seth going back at it a little bit. Seth hit a big three for Portland. Had a couple of good defensive plays. He was doing his part in the fourth quarter last night for Portland. Look, Seth Curry was on the Mavs a couple of years ago, and I thought he should have played more. Now, he's not in the conversation with his brother by any stretch, but look, this year in the regular season, Seth Curry was the third most accurate three-point shooter in the entire NBA. Third highest three-point percentage in the league this season. And we saw that last night, played 29 minutes, plus 13.
There you go.
The Blazers were plus 13. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Seth Curry was getting it done on both ends of the floor. 4 steals for him last night. He kept Portland in it, but man, I got to give a little bit to Terry Stotts. Before we get out of here for this segment, I thought last night's Blazers loss fell on Terry Stotts. I don't want to take anything away from Golden State. The Warriors did what they did. They're really tough to beat at their place. They showed the heart of a champion. They turned it on, and they made the big plays, the big shots, when it mattered most last night. But Terry Stotts, the head coach of the Portland Trail Blazers, what are you doing? What are you doing? The personnel decisions down the stretch, how are you going to have Evan Turner on the floor instead of Rodney Hood?
No, he's an idiot.
I mean, Rodney Hood is the reason you're here. Rodney Hood has been a tremendous X factor off the bench for this Portland team. He's a very good defensive player as well. How do you have him on the bench for Evan Turner? And also keeping Myers Leonard on the floor? Maybe that goes into the Kanter fatigue. Look, Enes Kanter is not a great defensive player, but Myers Leonard was getting absolutely destroyed on the pick and roll. He couldn't defend that to save his life last night. And that's all Golden State's offense was. In the final 5 minutes, they were going basic pick and roll with Steph Curry and Draymond Green, and Portland had no answers because Myers Leonard didn't know how to defend it. So that was awful. And then on the final possession for the Trailblazers, down by 3 in the final 15 seconds, Terry, you've got a timeout in your pocket, dude. Use your timeout, draw up a play, get something better than what you got. I know you want to trust your players. I know you trust Damian Lillard to get up a good shot in that moment, but come on, use your timeout, draw up a play, put your guys in position to be successful. He did not do that.
Why do they conserve that there?
I don't know. I mean, I guess is the thought you miss and you save it for another opportunity to advance the ball.
Preserve
but,
it.
Man, it's a big pet peeve I have. You usually see it more in college than you do in the NBA with coaches just keeping the timeout in the back pocket, trusting their players. Like, that's your job as a coach. That is what you're paid to do. Come up with a play. Give your players the opportunity to be most successful. Terry Stotts didn't do it. I'll always love Terry. Was an assistant with the Mavs in 2011. He's a hell of a coach. He's done a great job. Deserves a lot of credit for Portland being where they're at. But he was really, really bad last night. And I think he's been really, really bad in the first two games of this series. All right, we'll get back into this game a little bit more. Coming up next, though, we'll go to the Bay Area. We'll check in San Fran and talk to Matt Steinmetz of 95 7, the game out in the Bay Area. He covers the Golden State Warriors. We'll talk about last night's game. We'll preview the rest of the series, and we'll get an update on Kevin Durant's injury status. That's coming up next. Trey and BK on the Horn. Welcome back to the Midday Program, Trey and BK, a Friday edition of the show. No Trey Elling today, taking the day off, so it's just me, BK, holding down the fort. I appreciate all of you tuning in today. Specs text line 337-3776. But without further ado, let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline. Let's check in by the Bay Area. He is Matt Steinmetz, the host of Steinmetz and Guru, from 10 to 12 Pacific time on 95.7 The Game. He also handles pre- and post-game for the Golden State Warriors on the flagship station of Dubs Basketball. And he's nice enough to join us early on the left coast this morning. Matt, what's going on, man? Thanks so much for the time.
No problem. How you doing?
We're doing all right. We're doing all right. And let's start with last night's game, sir. Boy, what a game. Much better than game one, of course. The Golden State Warriors trailing by as many as 17 points. Down 15 at halftime, they find their way to come from behind and pick up the victory to take a 2-0 series lead over the Portland Trail Blazers. What can you say about this Golden State team, Matt? I mean, we've seen it a couple of times this postseason, especially since Kevin Durant went down, and it looks like Golden State's on the verge of losing a game, especially in their building, yet somehow, some way, they keep finding ways to win these games. What can you say about last night's comeback performance?
Well, if you've been watching this team for the last 5 or 6 years, you've seen kind of last night's game dozens of times, actually. Most of them are in the regular season, but they've had some of these in the postseason too. You know, on a practical level, the reason the Warriors are able to do this, come back from 15-point deficits and never be out of a game, It's because they shoot the three like no other team in history, basically. And they have an ability to be, in really short stretches, the best offensive team in the league and the best defensive team in the league. And so what will happen a lot of times is they don't need 8 possessions to go on a 13-4 run. You know, they need 5 possessions. They get a 3, they get a steal, they get a 2, they get a hold, they get a 3. You know, the next thing you know, it's 8-0, but it took 40 seconds. So it makes the game feel very, very long if you're an opponent and you're kind of the underdog. And so, you know, and now you have the fact that they're just the best at shooting the three of any team. And now you parlay that with they have the experience to know that they can come back. So they always know exactly how much time's left. They really know when their backs are against the wall. You know, they know when they kind of have to get going. They know when they really have to get going. And they've been together so long now, they don't even really have to talk about it. They just kind of get there together during a particular point in the game.
Truly remarkable to watch. Now, Matt, what about Steph Curry, a guy who's always been a polarizing player over the course of his NBA career, but especially in the postseason and nationally, Curry gets some knocks for not having any finals MVPs. And let's be honest, he was struggling a little bit with his shot at the start of this postseason. Obviously, things have changed dramatically since Kevin Durant went out with an injury. Were there any Golden State Warriors fans, anybody by the Bay, by where you do business, were fans at all starting to doubt Steph Curry come playoff time?
I don't know about doubt, but there was some worry, there was some concern, and the reality of the situation is, you know, Curry's a great player, but when Durant came here, you know, Durant's a better player than Steph Curry, most people believe, but Steph Curry is infinitely more loved out here in the Bay Area. So this will never be, as great as Kevin Durant is, he'll never be able to fully win over all the Warrior fans. And don't get me wrong, people love Kevin Durant out here. But Steph Curry's, you know, he's their first love. They're never going to throw him overboard. So what I'm getting at is Curry, after Durant gets hurt, you know, he starts to kind of re-energize himself and take more of a role and do all the things that he was doing before Durant. Now, can he keep it up? I don't know. I don't know if he can keep it up. But for the short time, or for this short while, you know, the Bay Area kind of is having the best of both worlds. And I know Kevin Durant's hurt, but they have Kevin Durant kind of waiting in the wings. But in the meantime, they've got their, you know, their number one guy, Steph Curry, leading them into the Western Conference Finals and hopefully for the Warriors, the finals. So everybody's kind of on cloud nine right now because it's kind of like they have their cake and they get to eat it too because they're winning and now Curry's back out front again and you can't say that he's not getting it done.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And you say Kevin Durant's waiting in the wing. Well, the news came out yesterday from team president Bob Myers, who said that Kevin Durant will not be making the trip with the team to Portland. He will not play in games 3 and 4. And Steve Kerr said after the game last night, the calf injury to Kevin Durant a little bit more serious than the team originally thought. I guess a two-part question here for you, Matt. Does KD come at all in this series, come back at all in this series? And also, if the Warriors do advance to the NBA Finals, do you think we see Kevin Durant at some point in this postseason?
I think we'll see him. Well, let me answer it this way. I think it's very possible he doesn't play in a Western Conference Finals, but I do think he'll play in the finals. Now, when I'm not exactly sure, but I mean, if you do the math, today's Friday. They released it yesterday. They said he's going to be reevaluated in a week. Well, Saturday's game three, Monday's game four, and Wednesday's game five. So theoretically, he's going to be reevaluated next Thursday. That takes him out of the first five games of the Western Conference Finals. So now I do think what we're looking at is, you know, how healthy will Kevin Durant be if and when he comes back in the finals. I do think he'll come back in the finals, though. But, you know, there's a real question of whether he'll be 100% or not.
Yeah, I guess that's my next question, Matt. Can the Warriors win the title without KD? Or if KD's back, what if he's, you know, 70, 80%? Do you think this Golden State team, because it appears that they're good enough to beat Portland, but Milwaukee, I think, is on a different level than the Portland Trailblazers. Do you think the Warriors can beat a really talented Milwaukee Bucks team with a less than 100% Kevin Durant?
You know what? That's what I want to know. That's the exact question I want to know, my friend. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know the answer to that question because, on the one hand, I would say I think Milwaukee should beat the Warriors if the Warriors don't have Kevin Durant. On the other hand, you can't dismiss the Warriors will be in their fifth straight NBA Finals. Milwaukee will have been getting there for the first time. You know, how do you measure how important that is? Well, it may be hugely important. Then again, it might not mean a thing if the Warriors are kind of overmatched. It won't matter that the lights are bright if the Bucks, you know, are just better than the Warriors. So you never want to say this, but I think it's safe to say out here in the Bay Area, there is a sentiment among some people, even though they'll never say it and they'll deny it, that they might not mind if Durant doesn't come back, just so if the Warriors do win it, the talk out, well, they only want it because of Durant, will stop. Like, that's the one thing out here that drives Warrior fans absolutely crazy, is if you say to them, if you play devil's advocate and you say, well, you know, the first Warriors title, the Cavaliers were hurt. Kyrie didn't play. Kevin Love didn't play. And by the way, Curry didn't win an MVP in that and NBA Finals. Year two, they blew a 3-1 lead. No other team's ever blown a 3-1 lead. So they got that on their resume. Well, then here comes Kevin Durant. They win. And, you know, if Kevin Durant gets hurt and the Warriors lose to Milwaukee, then I do think the people who want to rip Steph Curry, they're going to be able to rip Steph Curry if that's what they want to do. And obviously, if you want to say that's ridiculous, you say, look, the guy's got three finals victories. He's got two MVPs. You know, what are we really talking about here? So that's kind of what's on the line for the Warriors and whether Durant comes back, whether he doesn't come back, and whether they win it without him or lose it without him or win it with him. There's a lot of ammunition that sides are going to have, depending on how this comes out.
Matt Steinmetz of 95.7 The Game in San Francisco joining us right now. And last question for you, Matt, before we let you go, sir. I know you guys aren't ready to start thinking about the offseason up there by the Bay, but I have to ask. Kevin Durant, of course, can't opt out of his contract after this year. There's all kinds of conversation and scuttle about KD leaving Golden State when this season is over. Being a Warriors guy, a guy who covers the team and has covered the NBA for a long time, what's your gut sense telling you right now about Kevin Durant's offseason plans?
I think he's leaving. I definitely think he's leaving. And I also think the good news for the NBA is I think the Warriors are going to win it this year or they're not going to win it this year. But then it's over. Then this thing is gonna come to an end, or it should come to an end. I guess what I'm saying is I think next year Kevin Durant will leave, and then the Warriors will probably be among, I don't know, 6 or 8 teams that are good, and that maybe you say, hey, they got a shot to win it if things, you know, go their way, but they won't be the favorites anymore. But I do think Durant's going to leave. I think he's accomplished all he can accomplish here. And it's so funny. People say, well, why would he ever leave a situation like Golden State? And sometimes I say, why would he ever stay? I don't feel like he's being challenged basketball-wise anymore. I kind of think that's what's going on with Kevin Durant. In the last month of the season, he had about 8 games where he took less than 10 shots. And you could tell, it almost felt like he was a little bored. He was saying, I can go out and get 30 anytime I want, so we got great players. I'm just going to try to get 10, 11 assists a night. That's great, and that's a great team, but I do think he wants another challenge, so I do think he's going to roll at the end of the year.
Awesome. That's great stuff, Matt. Hey, thanks so much for the time, man. We really appreciate you getting up early this morning on the Left Coast and joining the show. Keep up the great work over at The Game, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for having me. Have a good one, man.
You too, man. You too. There he goes. Matt Steinmetz, host of Steinmetz and Guru from 10 to 12 Pacific time on 95.7 The Game, the flagship station for Golden State Warriors basketball. So if you want more Kevin Durant conversation and more Warriors talk, go ahead and check out that show. Matt does great work. That's interesting. Even Golden State fans seemingly bracing for the departure of lifetime Longhorn Kevin Durant this offseason. And it's hard to disagree. It sort of feels like KD is on his way out once this season comes to a close.
Do you think he really wants to play with Kyrie, though? I mean, that's the rumors, right?
Yeah.
They're all going to New York.
Oh.
It's going to be shiny, happy people. Bring the Knicks back to prominence.
Well, Zion was supposed to go to New York, right? We saw how that thing worked out. I don't know, man. I mean, I don't think KD wants to go by himself. I do agree with Matt. I don't think Durant's being challenged as much as he'd like to.
Well, the Knicks, that's a challenge.
And that would be a little bit of a challenge. But then again, when you combine and create another super team with Kyrie Irving and perhaps somebody else in free agency, then it's not as much of a challenge as going to just a random new team without all that talent.
You're the Wizards, baby. Yeah, Bradley Beal needs you.
Can't imagine that's going to happen. But yeah,
nope.
I think KD would want to play with Kyrie, to answer your question in one word. All right, good stuff there. We will take a break when we come back. Football at 45. There's an article from Hook'em Headlines. The 7 teams that we would love to see Texas play in 2019. They're not on the schedule right now, so that means it'd have to be a college football playoff appearance. But pretty fun conversation. Some old Big 12 rivals on this list as well. We'll give you that next. Trey and BK on the Horn. Welcome back to the Midday Program, Trey and BK, a Friday edition of the show. No Trey Elling today, taking some time to go play some volleyball. No, I am not kidding. That is where Trey Elling is on this Friday.
Lists.
Yeah, a little Top Gun. You know, yesterday was the 33rd birthday of the movie Top Gun. I'm sure Trey probably watched that 10 times last night after the show. One of the more overrated movies in the history of movies, might I add. I don't hate Top Gun by any stretch, but vastly overrated film, if you ask me. All right, midday show. Many thanks to Matt Stein, Mets, for his time. Talking a lot of NBA, of course, Western Conference Finals. Golden State going up 2-0 over the Portland Trail Blazers. We talked a little Texas baseball. We'll get back into those topics a little bit later. And we did have to move where we at in society, so we'll find a time for that as well. But right now it is a little after 10:45. It's our Football at 45 segment, sponsored by Crickets.
Opportunity.
As of right now, opportunity out there. Hey, Texas Longhorn football. There is no offseason for talking Texas football on this program. We are 106 days away from the season opener against Louisiana Tech on August 31st. I think I finally have my math right there. But an interesting article, kind of a fun off-script article from our friends over at hook'emheadlines.com. We'll give Andrew Miller some credit for this one. Seven teams we'd love to see the Longhorns face in 2019. Now, needless to say, these are teams not on the current schedule for the 2019 season. And look, Texas has a pretty incredible schedule. Kind of tough to have that great of a schedule when you're in the Big 12 because you play nine conference games, one of the only leagues in the country that does play nine in-league games. And obviously the Big 12 does that every year. You play the other nine teams in this conference every season. So, you know, 9 out of 12, 75% of your schedule is set in stone going into every year. But Big 12's got some entertaining teams. I don't need to tell y'all how awesome the Texas OU rivalry at the Cotton Bowl is every year. And even though this is a little bit of a down season on paper for this Big 12, still some pretty intriguing matchups on the slate of conference games for Texas. The trip to Iowa State looms large. Obviously, Oklahoma State coming to town, a trip to Fort Worth. Some good conference fun, some good conference rivalries in the league this year. And Texas has become one of the best teams in all of college football in terms of scheduling big dogs in the non-con. We seemingly break a story every week on this program about Texas scheduling some big powerhouse, blue blood college football program in the future. Now, unfortunately, a lot of times it's like year 2030 and 2031, so we're talking about kids who are 4 and 5 years old right now, but it's still something worth getting excited about. It's good for this program, and it's even better that Texas is getting back to the level of some of these blue bloods in college football. Obviously, that's the case this year. The Longhorns taking on LSU, that game in Austin in September. Texas will make the return trip to LSU next season. You've got home and homes against Michigan, against Alabama, against Georgia, against Florida down the road. It's awesome. It is a great thing if you're a Texas football fan, a great thing if you're a college football fan. Some epic games to watch. And of course, if you cheer on the Longhorns, some incredible road trips on the schedule moving forward. So
it's awesome.
It is. It is. Thank you, CDC. The other two non-conference games, Louisiana Tech and Rice. You know, not the most exciting there, but look, if you're Texas, you want to get a couple of tune-up games, and look, Louisiana Tech is not a bad football team by any stretch, but you understand Texas trying to get some relatively easy winnable games so you don't have a complete 12-game gauntlet. After all, the SEC schedules teams way worse than Rice and Louisiana Tech on a regular basis. So Texas's schedule is set in stone this year. The nine conference games, obviously the LSU game, are the most intriguing. So Hook'em Headlines has put together a list of seven teams that they'd like to see Texas play that aren't on the schedule. We'll go from 7 to 1. Number 7, the Georgia Bulldogs. Of course, Texas took care of Georgia in the Sugar Bowl back on January 1st, and the Longhorns already have scheduled a home-and-home series against Georgia in the future. But yeah, that would be kind of intriguing to get a little bit of a rematch against UGA. Texas fans feel awesome about that game. We don't take anything with a grain of salt. We chalk that up as a very impressive, perhaps program-defining victory for the Longhorns. But there are Georgia pundits and national pundits and Texas doubters who say, but Georgia didn't really care about that game. You know, they lost the SEC championship game to Alabama. They didn't really want to be there. DeAndre Baker wasn't playing. A couple of other Bulldogs weren't 100%. That game didn't matter to them. It meant way more to Texas. And they got Georgia on an off night. I disagree with those sentiments completely, but it would be pretty cool to see UGA this year during a regular season game so we could put all of that doubt to bed. And also, Georgia travels really well. Texas travels really well. Sanford Stadium, if it were a road game, is a hell of a place to watch college football between the hedges there in Athens. That would be a heck of a lot of fun. So that's number 7. Number 6, the Houston Cougars. We know Tillman Fertitta wants that. Yeah, Tillman Fertitta wants that, you know, trying to get the U of H into the Big 12 Conference. There's been conversation about that over the past few years, but it hasn't happened yet. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. Obviously, you have the in-state rivalry, and you've got the Tom Herman connection. Of course, Tom Herman, the former coach of the University of Houston, leaving to take the Texas job a couple of years ago. And you also have the Dana Holgorsen element. The new coach down at the University of Houston who spent the last decade or so coaching West Virginia. Of course, we all know what happened with the Mountaineers and the Longhorns a season ago. But plenty of intriguing elements if Texas and Houston were to square off. It's not happening this year. I don't know if it's going to happen anytime soon. But I'm excited to watch the U of H this year with Dana Holgorsen and the run-and-shoot offense that he has. De'Eric King, kind of a dark horse Heisman candidate going into the year. Really, really talented quarterback at the U of H. And obviously the Tom Herman connection would make that one fun.
You think Dana can get a good draw down there?
Well, Tillman Fertitta and the Board of Regents down at the U of H expect it. I mean, I'll never forget when Tom Herman left and they hired Major Applewhite. I was like, we better be winning 10 games a year. I think the outsider's perspective would say that's a little bit ridiculous just based off the resources that the University of Houston has, and it's tough to recruit when you're not in a Power 5 conference, but the aspirations are really high. And look, Dana Holgorsen never got fired from West Virginia. I think the writing was on the wall that if he didn't turn things around dramatically in 2019, he perhaps could have been on the way out after this year. But hey, Houston, they've spent money on facilities over the last few years. Now they spent some money on a head coach. So, I don't know if they're playoff contenders or anything like that, but in the American, UCF is obviously the cream of the crop. Maybe Houston's in that conversation for number two. All right, let's take a break. We'll give you the top five on the other side. The seven teams that Hook'em Headlines would love to see the Longhorns face in 2019. We'll take some of your thoughts as well. Specs text line 337-3776. We'll also jump back into a little NBA conversation as well. We'll let you hear from Steve Kerr on the extent of the Kevin Durant injury. We're 1 hour down, 2 to go. It's a Friday edition. Trey and BK on the Horn.